All this month, we're focusing on building connections as a central part of our religious experience. We've talked about the spiritual connections this church fosters and the connections to community that we build right here. Our faith tradition proclaims as its seventh principle the interconnected web of all existence. And often we reach out well beyond these walls, even around the world, to connect to others in service and in the works of love and justice. And these are not one-way connections, but rather through our individual and our collective engagements across differences of place and culture, we learn things that work their way into our own experience of the world. From these connections, we often draw meaning and understanding, not just of another place or people, but also of ourselves. Seeing the world from another's perspective provides us with a lens through which to see ourselves better and our culture better. You know, right now, Bob Tabor is in southern India. He's gone there for a month or two every year now for some time and has developed deep connections with children in an orphanage and with people living in the most primitive of villages. With him have gone many of us. Some dozen or so of us support a particular child in that orphanage. Others give generous gifts to help with the work of providing houses and schools and sanitary facilities in those villages. And many more families here have sent a friendship kit with him on one of those many trips. And in those kits, we've included a photo of ourselves and our family. And we received back from Bob a photo of the child receiving that kit. You know, Bob tells me that each year the children look for the photo of the person who sent the packet to them the year before and marvel at how that person has changed or grown or what they're wearing now. There is a language barrier here, yet still at a different level, many of us have connected to people, and they to us, that we will likely never see, and a place we will probably never visit. Now this week I was in for the UU Urban Ministry board meeting, and it was mentioned at that board meeting how this year nearly 30 people from our church had come into the Urban Ministry in Roxbury and helped out with some project like we did an Explorers Club event, and we prepared and served dinner for the Roxbury youth. Some of you were part of that. And right now, here this month, we're exploring issues that affect our immigrant neighbors. I believe it's an important religious experience to connect across difference as best we can. In doing so, we learn something about how others live and think, and I hope we also learn something about ourselves. As most of you know, my partner Malcolm and I have spent a significant amount of time in the past several years in a place called San Miguel Allende in Mexico. It's depicted in a beautiful piece of art right here, photos. And as many visitors do, we felt a connection to this beautiful place the moment we first arrived. The beautiful colors of this place, the light, the architecture, the weather, all wonderful. But there's something much more than that. You feel the spirit of this place, I think, in its connection to its ancient past, but more so in the connection to the ways of its people today. In those words from Octavio Paz, if you heard in the reading, the world is set in motion by the interplay of differences. Engaging with those differences, rather than expecting everyone to move towards a uniform world culture, has so much to teach us. In the time that I've spent in San Miguel, I have found wisdom in this place, a different wisdom than what permeates our society north of the border. I always feel a sense of mystery there, of things yet to be revealed in this place. To start with, almost every property is a walled property. Along every street you see walls with ancient doors, but have no idea what's behind them. And over the years, I've been invited through some of those doors and behind some of those adobe walls, and so often been utterly amazed at what's there. From a dusty street, you often enter into a lush garden. From a simple facade, you often enter into beautiful architectural detail. The beauty of a home in San Miguel is rarely what you see from the outside, but rather what is inside. I find this to be true of the people as well. Not a lot of outward showiness, but an inward beauty that you come to know over time. You know, we all know the lesson that it's what's inside that counts, right? But somehow that lesson seems more present, more available in San Miguel. Well, maybe that observation is leading you to think that San Miguel is a rather reserved place. And in some ways, yes, but in many other ways, definitely not. Roy Miller and Diane Miller just got back from there. And while they were there, Roy sent me an email indicating how lucky they were to be in San Miguel for a big holiday that had a parade and fireworks. And they certainly were fortunate to take in a parade. But the truth is, almost anyone who visits San Miguel for a couple of weeks will catch a holiday parade. I've heard that there are 80 holidays a year, and almost all of them have parades. In one of our longer visits to San Miguel, we were very lucky, or depends on your perspective, I guess, but we thought we were lucky to live in a house on one of the parade routes. So we could watch from our balcony the parades pass by. And what we saw was rather amazing, and I think insightful about Mexican culture. I want to describe this one parade for you. It's the Feast of Corpus Christi. Red velvet banners of a chalice with a communion wafer hang from balconies in the center of town, reflecting the significance of, at least in name, what is a solemn Catholic holiday. On the first float, that Catholic theme is vividly depicted by a young girl in a long plain dress and a shawl covering her head, cradling a statue of a large, bloody, crucified Jesus, cross and all, in her arms. You would think this might set the tone for a very solemn religious procession to follow, but not at all. The parade, by the way, of more than 10,000 people in it, is anything but solemn and anything but consistent with that theme. To start with, this day is also the feast of an Aztec corn god, and right behind the very Catholic float are nearly naked descendants of this indigenous culture, with incredible feathered headdresses, dancing and wildly chanting. You know, since the time of the conquistadors, there's been a real mix of indigenous religion and Catholicism. When the indigenous people were forced to make and worship statues of the Christian God and saints, they found ways to incorporate their indigenous religion. One ancient statue of the Virgin Mary that was particularly revered by many Mexicans was found to contain a statue of an Aztec fertility god inside. The local people all knew it was there. The priest, who was very impressed with their Catholic piety, did not. But let's go back to the parade. You won't believe, you truly won't believe what comes next. Hundreds of straight men in drag, well padded in appropriate places, wearing wigs and all kinds of women's clothing, from mini skirts to ball gowns. Some are made up as beautiful young girls, others as old hags, and many are flirting with the crowd and dancing in the streets to the music of the bands. These men are called the locos, the crazy people. Then comes another religious statue, this time escorted by none other than Big Bird, Mickey Mouse, Yogi Bear, Goofy, and a whole array of Disney and Sesame Street characters throwing candy into the crowd. There are also politicians campaigning right in the parade, simulated bullfights, and a bizarre, gigantic characters on stilts. The secular and the sacred, the popular and the ancient, the Catholic and the Aztec, the political and the fun, the silly and the serious, and even the crazy, seem somehow to flow together without notice of the apparent contradictions between them. Mexico is a very complex culture, where one thing does not necessarily yield to another but somehow gets added to it and enriches the mix. You know, with all the holidays, you have to get used to lots of bells ringing and lots of fireworks. One thing that gringos always get thrown off by is they expect the bells are always going to be ringing on the hour to set the time. Sometimes they ring on the hour, and most of the time they ring whenever anyone wants to ring them. And every holiday has fireworks and church bells, usually going until 1 in the morning, and then because no holiday is just one day, they start up again at 6 a.m. the next day. I have to tell you, that was my dog Cindy's biggest challenge presented for Mexico. And at 3 a.m. one morning, the three of us woke up from a sound sleep terrified, thinking we were in the midst of a battle or something. The noise was incredible. And frankly, I was angry, wondering why someone had to set up a series of loud fireworks at this hour. The next day, we learned from our maid why the fireworks went off in the middle of the night. You see, at least in this part of Mexico, when a Mexican dies, their family immediately goes outside and sets off the loudest fireworks they have to wake up the angels to make sure they let their loved one into heaven. Now, I don't agree with the theology or the practice, but I felt a bit ashamed that I had been so angry about it. It reminded me, the lesson, that I rarely know the whole story about any situation. The parades and the noise making are part of the color of Mexican life, but the real soul of Mexicans, and perhaps the lessons their lives might have to teach us, come from the quieter moments. And the first is the importance they place on family in this culture. If there's a conflict between work and the family, there's no expectation we'll do something with the kids and get to work. Work doesn't take this. Every day I'd walk to the Jardín, which is the main square in San Miguel, and there are many street vendors along the square, and on one corner is a little cart with drinks and snacks run by three generations of a family. Each day they come into town in a pickup truck. Grandmother is frail and in a wheelchair, but they bring her and she sits in her chair in the shade by the stand wrapped in her shawl. The little children play at her feet and interact with her, and an older child cuts a piece of fruit for her breakfast. In our country, she would be out of sight, probably in a nursing home. But here she goes to work every day with the family. The children go off to school, and Mom and Dad work at the cart. After school, the children return. They play in the park a bit, but they also work at the stand. The older one sells candy while the younger one picks up trash. Grandpa takes a turn selling cold drinks, especially during the busy afternoon time, and then goes and sits on the bench next to Grandma's wheelchair and rests, sometimes falls asleep. The mother brings everyone a meal. At around 10 p.m., the cart, the supplies, Grandma, Grandpa, the wheelchair, all the kids are loaded in the pickup truck. The older children then sweep the area where the cart was, and everyone heads home. I was fascinated by this family because it was so unlike our experience of family life. At first I thought, should Grandma really be here all day? Is this right? And what about the children? Yes, they go off to school, but what about after-school activities? What about friends and, you know, all the things kids have to join and do? But everyone in this family seemed happy. There was no complaining, just a lot of love. And I observed other families, and as I did, one of the things that has struck me most is how Mexicans treat children. I never saw a Mexican parent, in my visits there, yell at his or her child. I never saw them drag them along by the hand or create a scene in the market, as I see so often here. They were so patient with their children, and you know, the children responded very differently. They don't spend a lot of money on expensive toys or clothes because they don't have it to spend. And children are amused by very simple things. And to me, to my eyes, the joy that those children received from the toys that literally cost pennies seemed greater to me than the satisfaction our children get from their complex toys costing hundreds of dollars. Mothers or fathers often walk their children to school in the morning calmly having a conversation with them on the way. And many come back and walk them home in the afternoon. They play games with them. They sit in the park or on the front steps and watch them play with other children. Children are the treasures of a family. Family life is certainly far from perfect in Mexico. Many dads are legally or illegally away working in the States. But what family there is pulls together into a very strong unit. Mexicans feel a strong obligation to care for extended family. You know, Mexico does not have the safety nets in place that we do in this country, and there are elderly widows and young mothers with babies that are on the street begging. You will see them there. And tourists regularly give them a small amount of money. But most Mexicans do not. Because, as one told me, it's the family's job to take care of their own. And by doing so, you contribute to the family not doing their job. But they also know that there are people that don't have a family there. And one day I watched the owner of a very lovely restaurant in San Miguel bring out a meal on a tray to a beggar. There was a bowl of soup and bread and some other items, and she gently placed the tray on the beggar's lap, and later she came back to pick up the dishes. One of the reasons I think that family is more central is because life is just not so rushed. Mexicans have a difficult time understanding why we are in such a rush. While we were in Mexico, we looked at some real estate and with the hope that maybe someday we might get a little retirement place. And one day when we were doing that, there was a conversation about a house and there were several people there. And the realtor said, you know, you can walk to the center of town in less than 20 minutes from here. And that perplexed one of the Mexicans who was there, who said, why should I do that? You could take an hour. And what she meant was you could leisurely walk to town, talking with the folks you meet on the way, seeing the children at play, maybe even stopping for coffee or conversation. You know, there's a Mexican proverb that I love. It says, conversation is food for the soul. We worry about wasting time, and when you think about it, that's sort of a silly concept. What we're really saying is that we're not spending our time in some particular way that we see as productive. Mexicans see it differently. Talking to a friend for hours is time well spent, not wasted time, because it feeds the soul. This all leads Mexicans to have a bit of a different concept of time. It's simply not important or expected, for example, to be on time, unless you're going to a gringo's house. And as there are a lot of us gringos in San Miguel, and some mix socially with Mexicans, Mexicans have come to learn about this strange way North Americans view time. And now is a matter of accommodation. If you invite a Mexican to your home for a function, it's not uncommon for her or him to ask, hora inglesia, or hora norte americano, or gringo time, which means, when you say 6 o'clock, you really want me to come at 6 o'clock? They probably, if you say yes, they probably will still be late, but only probably 15 or 20 minutes. You know, when my last trip down, I went to a brunch given at good friends of mine in San Miguel, and the last Mexican guest arrived for brunch at 8 p.m. Now, I'm not suggesting, by the way, we go that far and don't show up for church late. But perhaps our stress level would be a bit less if we two were a bit looser with the concept of time. And sort of as a side, I was thinking about how when I was in Mexico and after the economic downturn in 2008, when our church had decided to postpone the capital campaign that we're now having, and I was a bit kind of down, a little concerned. I know the roof and many other things at the church really needed attention, and we really needed the campaign, and it had been in the works for about 6 years then, and I understood why we were putting it off, but I wondered if we would get back to it. And it was at that time that I really noticed something strange in San Miguel. You see, there's a lot of one-way streets, and no one ever drives their car in the wrong direction up the one-way street. But as I was sitting at a cafe, I kept observing something else. They will often instead back up the entire length of the street. It seems perfectly fine that if the car is heading in the right direction, it's okay to go back. Some people actually routinely plan on getting to their destination by going this way. I thought a lot about the odd driving habit in sort of metaphorical terms with what was going on in my head. So I think we were at the point we were at the Capitol campaign then, I got some understanding. And because even though we'd been backed up by the economy, we kept the church heading in the right direction. Well, that's kind of an aside. These are a few of the thoughts that linger with me each time I return from Mexico. The parades remind me how this place where I did not expect it, that there are dramatic differences of cultures coexisting without either being diminished or without any of them being diminished. What I saw of how families interact and how children are treated actually makes me yearn to see more of that here. In my own overly busy world, I try at least sometimes to remember and apply a little bit of that Mexican concept of time and not be in quite such a rush. I try to remember that I often operate with very limited knowledge of what is really going on in any situation and need to be very careful before I judge things. Each time I return to the abundance of life here, I realize I don't need so much and I ponder ways to do with less. And as people whisk by me on the streets or in public places here in Massachusetts, I miss the Mexicans who greet you day after day with a respectful Buenos Dias, Señor, que tenga buen día. And this, it's those little things in Mexico, things we seem to have sort of sacrificed for progress and speed in this country that meant so much to me in my visit and from which I think I've learned a lot. Now, the disclaimer, please understand, Mexico is no nirvana. You all know that there are lots of problems in Mexico. But I think you hear enough about those on the nightly news. And perhaps next time you see the negative news about Mexico, maybe you'll recall one of these stories. It's not easy, but we can try to stop judging Mexico and many other countries by imposing standards and understand that they also have worthy values and beliefs that can enrich our lives.